From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of March 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll hear all about the agricultural news for the day, including some information related to a hemp production workshop that'll take place in Freeport next week. That's in the northwestern part of the state, and U of I Extension is sponsoring it. We'll also check in on the weather forecast today with Mike Tenor from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, and hear about the cash grain side of the business with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, we're joined now by Dan Zwicker, Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us. Oh, I'm good. I'm so sorry that you were sick earlier in the week. We missed you at the All-Day Ag Outlook, but it was a good one. Hope you heard good things about it and that you're getting better. I know you're coming this way pretty soon.
Yeah, I miss coming up there and showing everybody my mullet haircut. They probably would thought I'd probably flipped a cog with my long hair in the back.
Well, I'm going to want to see that. Maybe you'll have to send a picture to that. Okay, so
if it lasts until the first 100-degree heat, I'll probably want to shave it all off. But yeah, right now I got quite a long hair in the back. I've never had long hair, so I decided that in my retirement years here, I just have long hair like I used to, or when because I couldn't have it in the 70s because I was in the reserves, so I had to have a military haircut. So now, since I don't have to work for anybody, I can have my long hair now.
Well, we'll get pictures and we'll send them out. How about that? Hey, so yeah, so today's pretty tough. I didn't actually open the markets up until just before we came on, and looking to see that corn appears to have been the leader to the downside, though wheat was down, you know, 10 cents and corn was down, what, 6. That seems like a pretty rough day for especially the coarse grains.
Well, several days. When you look at the charts on especially corn and wheat, I mean, we're making new lows in wheat. Corn is down now within a few pennies of the lows that were posted back in, I think, September or August, way back in August. So we're down. When you look at your, you know, March contracts and your May contracts in July, we're right down against the lows that we had there on that late summer break before we kind of regrouped and had our fall rally. So when you look at the technical action, it tells you, being a technician, I assume that the price action is telling me that all of the bearish fundamentals is what's driving this market lower. I suppose initially you have to probably start off with strong South American crop prospects at the moment is a primary driver of weakness for corn. Demand-wise, actually, the weekly corn sales and the bean sales weren't all that bad. Wheat. Bean sales were a little negative, but actually beans held up probably better than the other two commodities. But beans are wanting to roll over, too. They just haven't really shown, the weakness like what we've saw in corn and wheat. So based upon what I'm seeing here in the first few days of March, it kind of tells me that March 29th report is unlikely to have anything friendly in it. And we may end up finding larger supplies around than what we thought, or our consumption is not as great as what the first quarterly stocks report kind of implied. That was released after the government reopened again. So I guess what I see in corn and wheat, it doesn't look to me like there's anything positive out there on the fundamental front, at least in the near term. Now, I know everybody's wanting to talk about a late start to spring. And I see the weather forecast, Minnesota is going to get a foot of snow or whatever on this next storm coming across. But the weather markets, late springs, very rarely get any traction until you get into the middle part of May. And that's only if nothing's been planted. So now that doesn't mean that, you know, planting delays may not come in here and start impacting us maybe sometime earlier than mid-May. But, you know, we are still March, so nobody's really going to worry too much about any planting delays, at least while we're in the month of March. We got USDA's supply-demand tables coming out tomorrow. We'll see whether or not they do much changing in them. I think there's some indication that there could be a bubble up and carry out, but we'll just have to kind of wait and see what USDA says tomorrow on their report, Todd.
Did I hear you right when you're looking at the end of the month reports? And I know the acreage report is due, but you're worried about the grain stocks number.
Yeah, and the reason why I say that is even though these reports are supposed to be confidential, and they and I ain't accusing anybody that they're being made public, but they're being filled out and they're being sent in to certain locations. And so I always watch price action when these reports are actually being filled out, whether or not it's a summer crop production number, or in this case here, what we're worried more about is what acreage intentions are going to say. And what we're also going to be worried about is what the stocks number is going to say. So when these reports are being filled out during the late February, early March timeframe and being sent in, that information is starting to funnel in to a point. And it just so I always watch price action when this information is starting to be gathered as a indication what that report may be indicating. And that's just, I'm just doing that from a technical perspective on based upon price action is indicating that these reports are not going to have anything friendly in them. Now I could be totally wrong, but that's just my observation over the years.
Hey, thanks, Dan, so much for joining us today. Look forward to actually having you on Commodity Week tomorrow. We'll do that live because it's a report day, so those who can stay with us for the whole hour tomorrow afternoon, we'll hear Commodity Week with Dan Zwicker and the rest of the crew. Thanks so much, Dan.
Very well. We'll talk to you tomorrow after the report.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with trade, but the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement, or USMCA, which would be an update of the current NAFTA agreement. Republicans and Democrats alike really are not very happy about U.S. tariffs on Canadian and Mexican steel and aluminum that sparked off a trade war over farm goods before the USMCA was signed, and those remain a bipartisan hurdle to ratification. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, on behalf of agriculture, says he's working for a different quota system that would be acceptable to the President of the United States.
The President, we are working hard to persuade him that the steel industry here, of which he's concerned, can be protected through a TRQ program here rather than tariffs and release the retaliatory tariffs against our farmers.
House Democrats, meantime, want enforceable labor and environmental standards before passing the USMCA. Either way, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer says it just needs to pass.
If the Congress doesn't see fit to pass that, then everything else we're talking about is kind of like a footnote, because it'll mean we can't do trade deals. It would be such an admission of a failure by all of us.
It's something that the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, Chuck Grassley from Iowa, whose panel oversees trade, hopes doesn't happen, but concedes the last time that Nancy Pelosi was the Speaker of the House, well, she held up trade agreements.
She took over speakership 2007. Columbia was up. She didn't bring it up in 4 years. It took a Republican House of Representatives to move it. I hope she has a different attitude towards Mexico and Canada agreement.
The finance chairman says a divided Congress will also force him to consider Democrats' demands on labor, the environment, and enforcement, though the deal itself cannot be changed, only supplemented with side language. Well, let's skip from trade now to some numbers USDA released earlier in the week. Forecasts from the Department of Agriculture show a slight rise in net farm income for this year, 2019. Michael Clements from NAFB, the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, has more.
Data released by the Department of Agriculture indicates net farm income could rise 10% this year to roughly $69 billion, following a 16% decline in 2018. But American Farm Bureau Federation Chief Economist John Newton says these early projections offer a best-case scenario.
It's important for folks to remember that this is a very, very early estimate of what farm income could look like in 2019. USDA assumes in this forecast record production of livestock products. They assume trend yields for many of the major field crops, and then they also assume slightly higher prices for many of the commodities except for pork and soybeans.
Newton says there are many uncertainties that could change this outlook.
The expectation is for slightly higher farm income in 2019, but this is still a really early estimate. A number of uncertainties remain when you think about weather conditions, you think about acreage allocations, and ultimately we need to see these tariffs removed for us to continue to serve those key export markets.
He says the forecast also shows a low return on assets for farmers and ranchers.
USDA's most recent projections have U.S. farmer on average return to assets of about 1.3%. That's about half what you get from the U.S. Treasury equities and well below the average rate of return for many other financial instruments. And this is at a level that we haven't seen since the 80s and 2000s. So return on assets remains very, very low.
Michael Clements, Washington.
And I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Hey, you know, this last farm bill, the one Congress just passed and that USDA is in the process of implementing right now, includes some new language on industrial hemp. Not hemp for medicinal use or recreational use, but industrial hemp for use in, well, cloth and rope and anything that might be fibrous. Well, farmers are pretty excited about the possibility of diversifying in this part of the world where hemp has been grown in the past into this brand new crop. University of Illinois Extension has put together a production workshop that farmers can attend next week. It's on the 12th of the month. That's next Tuesday. Philip Alberti from University of Illinois Extension has been helping to coordinate the workshop, which will take place again in Freeport. I asked him to tell me a little bit about it.
There is a lot of excitement. It's just that there are a lot of questions that we need answers to. Whether or not the crop is going to be getting into the ground in 2019 still remains seen. We love the optimism that we see because there is a lot of untapped potential out there. But we need to get those answers, and that's why we put on this hemp production conference. We're having folks from Springfield, including the Illinois Farmers Union and the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, to talk about that. What producers can expect to get licensed and get the proper registration. And then we're going to have farmers come in from Wisconsin and agronomists from Legacy Hemp named Brian Parr to come in and talk about kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly about what they experienced in 2018, given that Wisconsin is a year ahead of Illinois with regards to making hemp production legal. So it's going to be a great event, a lot of information, and we're really hoping that we get a great turnout to show producers the potential, but also to temper expectations for the 2019 growing season.
So we should be clear for those that are listening that this is industrial hemp and it's not medical marijuana or marijuana in general. It's to be used in other forms. So hemp historically was used as a fiber for ropes and other products, and that's where these bales eventually should be headed.
Absolutely. This is going to be a focus on industrial hemp for grain and fiber, and while we do hope to potentially have some type of CBD workshop later on in the year, this is primarily for grain and fiber, and the production systems for those are entirely different. When you think of grain and fiber, you're thinking similar to hay production in a very medieval sense, I suppose, but then with CBD production, it's regarding transplants, think vegetable production and flower production. So the systems are entirely different, the equipment is entirely different, and then the market will be quite different for that as well. And given that there are currently no processing plants for grain, fiber, or CBD in Illinois currently, there's still a lot that needs to be done to expand this market to make it a viable crop for producers in Illinois.
That's University of Illinois Extension's Philip Alberti. If you'd like to attend the Industrial Hemp Production Workshop that's going to be taking place in Freeport next Tuesday from 9 to noon, you can do that by registering online or call your local Extension office, either one, and they can point you to the right place. It's easiest probably to search Google for Stevenson County, Illinois Extension, and then to look for the link for the Industrial Hemp Production Workshop. The cost is just $20. For this Thursday afternoon, I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. We're now joined by Mike Tenuram. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us today. I sure appreciate that.
Always great being here, Todd. I hope you're having a nice afternoon there.
I am. You know, it would be nicer if it would warm up a little, though I don't think that that really is in the offing, other than maybe some warmer temperatures over the next week. But even those don't get all that high. What's your considerations as we go through the next month?
Well, it will turn a little bit warmer later this weekend and through next week. That's primarily because we have two very strong systems that approach. Each one of those will turn winds from the south, and because of that, we will see temperatures warm to above normal levels. But we're not going to see a big warm wave like we'd like to see. We're not going to see highs in the 70s and 80s, which can happen in March, but clearly that's not going to happen for a while. And probably the larger issue is that once we get beyond the next week, it does turn colder again, starting in 7-8 days from now and then continuing into the last week of March. So we're not going to see a big warm up, and we know that March is going to end up colder than normal across a big chunk of the central U.S.
That seems, Mike, like it could be a problem even if we don't get more rainfall, because if memory serves, we've had a pretty wet fall and winter.
Well, in fact, you've never seen anything like this, because we've absolutely smashed some records here going back 125 years. If you look at rainfall over September through February, which we define as autumn and winter meteorologically, the last 6 months were the wettest of that period, going all the way back to before 1895 and 96. And we beat that record by a substantial amount. So this is easily one of the wettest periods of the last 125 to maybe even 200 years across the central U.S., just statistically speaking. So it's real wet, and as noted, we're going to see a lot more rain here over the next week. And then after that, things do start to dry out a little bit. So we have two more major systems to move through, or deal with at least, this weekend and again on Tuesday and Wednesday. But then after that, it won't be completely dry, but it won't be real stormy like it has been.
Even if it's dry, though, I wouldn't think that the evaporation rates would be very high if we don't get much heat.
Well, we're not going to get much heat, because after that second system moves through, we see another dump of cool air, and that's going to keep temperatures considerably below normal all the way into the last week of the month. But keep this in mind, Todd. We tried to look at that data and see if we know how wet it was in the autumn and winter, does that tell us anything about the future weather in the Corn Belt? It doesn't tell us a whole lot. You can isolate out pretty much every single month going forward through the summer, and none of them tend to be particularly on the dry, warm, wet, or cool side. You just kind of see a mix of weather where sometimes it's real warm and you have a problem. Sometimes it ends up staying real cool. Sometimes it stays real wet. I mean, just to give you an example here, 1993 was the big flood year across the Corn Belt, and that indeed was preceded by one of the wettest autumn and winters on record. So that was a problematic year for corn in particular. Yields that year were around 25 bushels per acre below the trend. But keep in mind, 2016, that was only 3 years ago, and that was one of the better yields on record at around 7 bushels per acre above trend, and rainfall prior to each of those growing seasons was pretty similar. And we see a lot of statistics like that for both corn and soybeans, where you can sure find some poor years, but you also can find some great years. And what that tells us is that all of this rain, although clearly a bit of a problem for pre-planting type of field work and maybe even getting some of the spring wheat planted in the northern plains, it just doesn't mean a whole lot to the big picture, because we can still get out of this situation with, say, a warm April, which has happened in the past, or maybe a warm May. On the other hand, if we don't see that, well, then, you know, we'll have more problems. So, but again, the point is that it doesn't tell us which scenario is coming up.
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, and helps us wrap up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.